Thank you for joining today's podcast, where experts tackle bronchiolitis obliterans syndrome, also known as BOS, B-O-S, and discuss the current landscape and future clinical directions. This podcast is sponsored by Zambone USA LTD. Zambone is currently advancing its phase 3 clinical program for the treatment of BOS following lung transplantation. Joining us for the podcast today are Dr. Shambhu Arial and Dr. Howard Wen. Dr. Arial.
Hello, everyone. My name is Shambhu Arial. I'm the medical director of the lung transplant program at Inova Fairfax Hospital in Northern Virginia. It's great to be here. I have no disclosures related to this presentation today.
Dr. Wong.
Hi, my name is Howard Huang. I am the medical director of lung transplantation at Houston Methodist Hospital in Houston, Texas. I don't have any relevant disclosures related to this presentation.
Dr. Wong, BOS has often been described as the Achilles heel of lung transplantation. Is that still the case or has that changed?
Yes, I think that's a very true statement. Even though we've been doing lung transplant for several decades now, BOS remains a major problem and a major challenge to long-term success after lung transplant.
Has the incidence, prevalence, and or survivability of BOS changed recently? And if so, what would you attribute to those changes?
Well, when you look at the registry data, we have made advances in terms of overall survival. And when you look at the median survival compared to several decades ago, it's definitely gone up in terms of overall survival. However, a lot of those gains are derived from kind of early events, you know, so better surgical techniques. Maybe we've become better at picking candidates and getting them through the initial surgery, taking care of them in the ICU. A lot of the early events, I think we've gotten a better handle on. But when you look at the incidence of BOS and kind of this diagnosis of chronic rejection, that remains approximately the same. You know, that really highlights an area that we need to find better solutions for to improve long-term success.
Dr. Arial, anything you'd like to add to that?
I echo Dr. Huang's sentiments. BOS remains the Achilles heel of lung transplant even now. And unfortunately, while the short-term outcomes after lung transplant have changed over the years, the long-term outcomes have not done so, unfortunately. So there's a great need to address BOS as we continue to take care of our patients.
It's a complicated issue, right? Because it's a really insidious process that tends to sneak up on people. It's frequently diagnosed later in the course, you know, kind of early BOS is frequently missed. And then once we have a diagnosis, we don't have a lot of great therapies that could either arrest or reverse the process. So there are kind of multiple factors that contribute to this continuing to be a major a limiter of long-term success. I would say we've done a better job in terms of defining it, you know, at least agreeing on what it is and coming up with, you know, kind of more consistent definitions. That obviously is something that's been refined and continues to be refined over time as we better understand this disease process. Because we're able to characterize it better, we're able to kind of really dissect it and look at multiple facets, you know, look at, you know, biomarkers, you know, kind of these changes in molecular profile and biopsy findings and gene expression profiles and such, to better understand, you know, this disease process. And hopefully this is going to lead to future improvements in terms of diagnosis, but also therapy.
Speaking of biomarkers, what is the current status of biomarkers to be used as tools for either differentiation of clad phenotypes or early detection and diagnosis of BOS?
I would say we still have a great unmet need for biomarkers. There's been a lot of interest in different biomarkers in diagnosing not only chronic lung allograft dysfunction, but also acute lung allograft dysfunction, because that certainly leads to chronic lung allograft dysfunction down the road. There can be multiple biomarkers that can be looked at. The most common one that's currently of interest is something called cell-free DNA levels. These are fragments of DNA from the allograft that get released into the recipient circulation and could be used to monitor the allograft function over time. We were a part of a large multicenter study headed by the NIH to look at acute lung allograft dysfunction in lung transplant recipients. And there's more and more interest of using this tool for CLAD as well. As time goes by and this technology gets perfected, we may be able to use that to make a distinction between the different phenotypes of CLAD, and as such, making a diagnosis of BOS early on. But as it stands right now, we do not have a very clear and useful, widely available biomarker for that purpose. So that's something that's lacking in terms of making an early diagnosis of BOS.
Frequently, it takes time to make this diagnosis because it's still a diagnosis of exclusion. There's a lot of ambiguity when it comes to making that sort of diagnosis. And you have to rule out these causes of acute lung allograft dysfunction, right, to call it BOS. You know, there's other things that contribute to lung function loss or decline in these patients over time that have maybe nothing to do with BOS. But before we label somebody with that diagnosis, we have to kind of systematically go through a long list of other potential factors that contribute to loss of lung function.
Dr. Ariel, what is the role of lung function monitoring to detect a trend of FEV1 decline as an early indicator of BOS versus the biomarker approach?
That's a great question. So historically, we've relied on FEV1 measurement as a tool to diagnose BOS. So the stark definition of BOS has been, you know, decline in FEV1 below the 80% threshold of the best FEV1 of the patient over their transplant period. Many a time, there are other factors that play into decline in FEV1, and all of these acute reversible causes need to be ruled out before we make a diagnosis of BOS, which makes it particularly challenging. And also there is a loss of time when this is done. I think it remains an important tool, but if you were to have biomarkers that detect development of these changes of chronic rejection in the allograft earlier than FEV1, that would certainly help us identify BOS in a timely manner so we can intervene early on. But again, you know, we don't have such a biomarker at our disposal right now, although there's a lot of interest and research going on in developing such biomarkers.
At this point, unfortunately, it's still the most sensitive tool we have, you know, at least to begin to pick up on something not functioning well with the graft. The hope is that these molecular biomarkers are going to be much more sensitive and are going to sound the alarm much earlier, where an intervention is likely to be beneficial instead of when the patient is already losing lung function.
Dr. Wong, we were talking here about early diagnosis of BOS, but how does that impact the outcome and care of patients?
The important thing of making the early diagnosis is that you have more time to make sure you have the correct diagnosis and try to introduce some sort of intervention, right? So I think one of the things that we've really made some progress in is identifying risk factors that then contribute to development of BOS and chronic lung allograft dysfunction. So I think we've really kind of have a pretty good idea at this point what are some of the major risk factors that contribute to that. If we're making the diagnosis earlier and we understand what are some of these major risk factors, we can then direct our attentions toward these factors that promote development of BOS. Frequently, you know, the treatment is kind of escalation of their immunosuppression or optimization of their immunosuppression, perhaps switching to some other form of immunosuppression that the patient was not on previously. You know, these are all, you know, things that can be done, you know, looking for donor-specific antibodies, development of new donor-specific antibodies. Is there some other kind of non-immune, non-alloimmune factor that's driving the development of BOS and promoting it? You know, does the patient have kind of esophageal dysfunction that's severe and they're chronically aspirating? Has there been a recent infection? You know, and that frequently, you know, sets off inflammation and, you know, an immune response that then contributes to develop CLAD. So I think going back to the original question, I think early kind of diagnosis will allow you to try to, introduce these interventions to mitigate, factors that contribute to BOS. And then for some patients, there are, clinical trials that potentially could be considered. And, if you diagnose people earlier in the course, you actually have maybe a little more flexibility in terms of being able to consider them for a clinical trial rather than somebody who's very late in the course of a BOS and really doesn't have many options and wouldn't qualify for clinical trials.
Dr. Ariel, what do you see as the most important unmet needs in the diagnosis, short-term and long-term monitoring and treatment of BOS, and both from the clinician's perspective and then the patient's perspective?
This goes on to the initial question, our initial discussion that we had. BOS remains the Achilles heel of lung transplant. We do a rather poor job at diagnosing it in time. And as a result of that, most of the patients are quite advanced when a diagnosis is made. And as a result of that, we do not have effective therapies to treat BOS. So I think the most important unmet need is really a good tool to make a diagnosis on time. And for the patients particularly, I would think the treatment modalities that we have are not adequate in controlling BOS or arresting the progression of BOS. Ideally reversing the changes of chronic rejection or when BOS is diagnosed, many a time a little later than we could have done, we change around immunosuppression, we go from, cyclosporin if they're on to tacrolimus, change around their second agent, like from Imuran to mycophenolate. We think about adding azithromycin if they're not already on it. We think about extracorporeal photopheresis, as we discussed, but none of these therapies work well in everybody. And so there is a great need to find a therapeutic tool that helps patients with BOS, ideally with early diagnosis. I'm glad the lung transplant community is starting to look at and investing heavily in the research for BOS in these years right now.
I think from the patient's perspective, they want something that is probably more specific. They don't want to be living in fear of every little lab test or measurement. To them, something that's very specific, holds great value, right? And so you could imagine having a constant fear of, my lung function is just a little bit lower, is this time to panic? And, so that's a difficult situation for a lot of people to be in, And so I think, if from a patient's perspective, what they want is kind of a practical way to have a specific diagnosis. Now, that's a very, tough set of criteria to satisfy, right? Considering the state of the art right now. Ultimately, at least from that sort of perspective, we can have very sensitive tools to detect a certain pathology, but if it's very cumbersome and, the patient doesn't see any value in it and the patient doesn't feel like, this is an important thing, then it doesn't really make a big difference. And so how do we balance kind of the usability of a particular tool that's going to sound the alarm at the appropriate time, without too many false alerts? Preservation of lung function is something that's worthwhile, that really translates into tangible, outcomes, and that is important. It's not kind of this abstract concept like, yeah, your lung function's a little lower. That has very real implications, in this population.
Dr. Wong, what are some of the emerging or potential future treatment strategies that are emerging for BOS?
So there are a number of inhaled therapies that are being developed for this space. And I think people are very interested in, these therapies that deliver drugs without or with minimal kind of systemic side effects. One practical solution is kind of this inhaled delivery. And so several agents are being studied that are being delivered by this method. And one of them would be inhaled cyclosporin. There are other agents, that are being investigated in this space. I think the other kind of interesting approach is, what about the role of antifibrotics? So one of the characteristics of BOS is, you know, kind of this fibrous obliteration of the small airways. We see that in the pathology associated with this diagnosis. And, you know, are some of these anti-fibrotic therapies that are coming online useful in mitigating this process? There's a lot of work that's being done in pulmonary fibrosis, and I think some of those lessons can be applied in this area. In the future, what we'll probably have are, you know, a combination of systemic and oral therapies that are designed at kind of slowing down this process. The other, you know, angle would be to approach it from a kind of, if it's an immunologically mediated process, that's really, you know, the inciting and driving force. What do we do to mitigate that, or how can we do what can we do to attenuate that? I think ECP seems to be a promising approach, although it's not been fully validated. And other kind of immunomodulatory therapies, you know, if there's a antibody mediated rejection, you know, if we can better treat that, or, you know, really kind of head that off. If we're going even further back, if we have better ways of even preventing some of these inciting factors from occurring, you know, like primary graft dysfunction, or the development of donor-specific antibodies that has been associated with eventual development of BOS. These, you know, kind of the preventative approaches, you know, that happen much earlier than, you know, the diagnosis of BOS, but, you know, kind of going to some of these root causes or contributing factors. I wouldn't say root causes, but they're definitely major, you know, risk factors. How do we really mitigate that? How do we kind of pick up on who's going to have a problem with a particular infection? So better, you know, respiratory pathogen therapies. Again, you know, there's antivirals of various types that are being developed. You know, how do we kind of really control these inciting factors? Better surgical techniques at kind of dealing with people who have problems with their esophageal motility or esophageal function. How do we kind of mitigate that? So I think it has to be a multi-pronged approach. And ultimately, I think it has to be specific to any particular patient's kind of set of risk factors that would lead to BOS and trying to control them. And I think finally, there's other cellular and type of regenerative type therapies that are being explored in the context of, you know, chronic or end-stage lung disease. You can argue that BOS is, you know, a manifestation of end-stage lung disease. And so are some of these kind of regenerative therapies, cellular therapies, are they something that can potentially be applied in this field? And I think there's a lot of promise, but there's a lot of work to do to really define what's going to be fruitful.
I think while the last two or three decades have really not seen much of a development in therapy for BOS, we really live in an exciting time where there's been a lot of interest in research for BOS, including the inhaled therapies like inhaled cyclosporin, the ECP, and also newer molecules that are being investigated in other diseases like other chronic end-stage lung diseases, but also autoimmune conditions that kind of behave in a similar way. So I think in the next 5 to 10 years, there's going to be some effective therapy that we'll have with the effort and resources that are put into the diagnosis and management of BOS as a community.
That goes from kind of an early diagnosis, then coupled to kind of a more directed therapy, depending on what risk factors are identified and believed to be the major drivers of BOS.
Well, I think we live in an exciting time where there's a lot of resources put in to diagnose and manage BOS. So I think the next 10 years are going to be critical in results from those trials, with hopefully effective therapies to these different groups of chronic rejection, including BOS. I remain very hopeful about the future.
That concludes our discussion today on the current landscape and future clinical direction of BOS. Once again, we would like to thank Dr. Ariel and Dr. Wong for joining us and our sponsor, Zambone USA LTD. Thank you for joining today's podcast.
Thank you. It's been our pleasure.
Thank you. Appreciate the conversation.
At Zambone, we know the big difference between living and truly living. Since 1906, We've been committed to innovating cure and care to make patients' lives better. We're aiming to deliver medicines and modern healthcare solutions that allow them to get the most out of their time. Because at Zambon, quality of life means deeply enjoying each moment. Life enhanced.